We're not going to be in any particular book like we had been when we were in the book of Genesis. We talked about our last lesson. We talked about the law that was given to the children of Israel that was to make them, to help them to be a showcase to the world. And things didn't work out exactly the way they should have worked out, but they certainly were a showcase to the world, but in a different way. So God chose them, a very insignificant nation of slaves known as Israelites, and he brought them from among the most powerful nation in the world, which was Egypt. And he did it in a very, very miraculous way. With these slaves, the Lord went out to transform them to a great nation to become the showcase, as I mentioned, for the entire world to see the strength and the power and the salvation afforded them by the only true God of the universe. Moses, their great leader, told them, as long as you obey God's law, you will be blessed. But if you don't obey God's law, you will be cursed. Under God's special providence, how many years did they really, were they really blessed? I don't know if, I don't think we can necessarily came up, you might be able to sit down and just meticulously figure out how many, in a general term, how many years they were blessed, but it seems to me like they were more cursed than they were blessed because of all the different times that they were stiff-necked and they revolted against the Lord. From Abraham to the elders that lived after Joshua, we read of many blessings that occurred to them. Okay, there was also some cursings along the way, but there were many blessings in that time period. Starting with the book of Judges until we get to Christ, there was a decline in all those great blessings. And the more they sinned, the more curses they received. During the period of the kings that followed Solomon, there was a great, great increase in curses that they received. God's grace and power definitely was showcased by Israel, but not because of their enduring faith. They were showcased by their disobedience and unbelief. And God showed exactly what happens when you do that. And they demonstrated exactly what takes place when you disobey God. Deuteronomy 9:1-3 says, "Hear, O Israel, you are now about to cross the Jordan to go in and dispossess nations greater and stronger than you, with large cities that have walls up to the sky. The people are strong and tall, Anakites. You know about them and have heard it said, who can stand up against the Anakites?" What does he mean, you have heard about them and you know about them? Who is Moses referring to here? Who are the Anakites? You know who the Anakites. I'm in Deuteronomy 9:13. Who knows who the Anakites were?
Big, tall people.
Big, tall people, that's right. And what did 8 of the 10 spies say when they came out of the land of Canaan after they spied the place?
Said they were like, we would be like grasshoppers.
Yeah, we look like grasshoppers. We can't possibly take these people. Okay, but we know Joshua and Caleb said, well, absolutely we can. We got God on our side. So when he refers to that and he says, you know about them, and you've heard it said, okay, that they're strong and tall. Well, he says, but be assured today, verse 3, be assured today that the Lord your God is the one who goes across ahead of you like a devouring fire. He will destroy them. He will subdue them before you, and you will drive them out and annihilate them quickly, as the Lord has promised you. It is not because of your righteousness or your integrity that you're going into to possess the land. Why was it that they were going to possess the land? Who remembers?
Because the nations that they were supposed to drive out were so wicked, and also God wanted to prove what he could do through the Israelites.
Very good. Very good. That's exactly what it says. But on account of the wickedness of these nations, the Lord your God will drive them out before you to accomplish what he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Understand then that it is not because of your righteousness that the Lord your God is giving you this good land to possess. Because you're a stiff-necked people, it says. What does he mean when he uses that phrase, you're a stiff-necked people? Yeah, you're stubborn.
What do you think that phrase refers to, Bob? You think it refers to like leading an animal that won't turn its head?
I think that'd be a good example. Yeah, you bow your head like somebody's trying to pull you along, and you're like bowing your head like, no, I'm not going that way. That's what animals do, don't they, sometimes? Okay, that's good. That's a good analogy there. Remember this and never forget how you provoked the Lord your God to anger in the desert. From the days you left Egypt until you arrived here, you have been rebellious against the Lord. So they were blessed, but all along they would rebel and bow their necks, so to speak, and God would still be merciful to them. Deuteronomy the 9th chapter, verse 24 through 28. Here's what Moses said. He says, you have been rebellious against the Lord ever since I've known you. Wow. I lay prostrate before the Lord. How many days did he lay prostrate before the Lord, begging to have the people saved after they had, when he came down off the mountain? You remember he was in the mountain for 40 days. There he was, the Lord was giving him the law. And then he comes down, and what does he see? They're dancing around a calf that Aaron had made, and they're just sinning like all over the place. And so Moses says, he went back up in the mountain. How many days did he lay prostrate before the Lord again?
40.
Another 40 days. I lay prostrate before the Lord 40 days and 40 nights because the Lord had said he would destroy you. I prayed to the Lord and said, O sovereign Lord, do not destroy your people, your own inheritance that you redeemed by your great power and brought out of Egypt with a mighty hand. I'm in Deuteronomy 9th chapter, verse 27. Remember your servants, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Overlook the stubbornness of this people, their wickedness and their sin. Otherwise, the country from which you brought us will say, because the Lord was not able to take them into the hand he has promised them, because he hated them, he brought them out to put them to death in the desert. So Moses was very mindful of the attitude that the people, that the Egyptians would have and the other people in the surrounding nations was going to have. It was like going to make fun of them. And Moses was like, no, don't do this, Lord. We know you love us. Okay? But they are your people, your inheritance that you brought out by your great power and your outstretched arm. Now, Aaron was the one that fashioned the calf, was he not? People took all their earrings off and all the gold that they had that they brought out of Egypt, and they fashioned this calf. Did you ever wonder why Aaron didn't die on the spot? Why wasn't he put to death? Anybody know why he wasn't put to death? Pretty simple. Only because Moses prayed for him. Only because of a prayer. And I thought it was pertinent to mention that there's power in prayer, isn't there? Think about Simon the sorcerer in Acts chapter 8. Think about he wanted to purchase the spirit to perform miracles. And what happened there? He asked the apostles to pray for him. And he was told to pray and ask for forgiveness. Well, after Moses had came down off the mountain, after he'd been up there for 40 days, bowed down and prostrate before the Lord, it says, without any food or any water. That's what it says. I ate no bread and drank no water because of all the sin you have committed. That's in Deuteronomy, the 9th chapter, verse 18 through 20. It tells us this story. And then, in verse 20, he says, and the Lord was angry enough with Aaron to destroy him, But at that time, I prayed for Aaron too. It was because of this prayer that Aaron was saved. Has anyone here ever laid prostrate before the Lord, even a whole week? And you ever, have you even went without a day prostrate before the Lord without food and water? I would say that that's possible with among some of us. Maybe. I haven't, but I would say that maybe some of you have. Moses did it for 40 days. 40 days and 40 nights without food or water. It's not very hard to understand why God said what he said about Moses in Deuteronomy 34, chapter verse 10 through 12. He says, "No prophet has risen in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face, who did all the miraculous signs and wonders that the Lord sent him to do in Egypt, to Pharaoh and to all his officials and to his whole land. For no one has ever shown the mighty power or performed the awesome deeds that Moses did in the sight of all Israel." So Moses was a great, great leader, and he had to put up with so much rebellion. It's just unbelievable how he could stand it, but he did. And then after the death of Moses, a faithful warrior took his place. What was his name? Joshua. Right. He's the one that took the children of Israel, the ones that were left. And we know that the ones who were left were the sons and the daughters. All the other people were destroyed in the wilderness after wandering around for 40 years. So he took them across in the land of Canaan. By using strategy of divide and conquer, Joshua split the Canaan territory in half. He took care of all those countries that were in the middle. And then he headed south, took those people, then he headed north, and he took those people. You can find that in Joshua chapter 6 through chapter 11. Chapter 11, verse 19 and 20 in Joshua, it says, "Except for the Hivites living in Gibeon, not one city made a treaty of peace with the Israelites, who took them all in battle. For it was the Lord himself who hardened their hearts to wage war against Israel, so that he might destroy them totally, exterminating them without mercy, as the Lord had commanded Moses." The next verse says, "No Anakite was left in Israelite territory. Only in Gaza, Gath, and Ashdod did any survive." Well, what great Anakite do you know came from Gath? Goliath. That's right. So there's a connection there I thought you might be interested in making. Goliath lived in Gath, and Goliath was the giant that David slew. Also later on, one of Goliath's brothers was slain by, I think it was one of David's sons or brothers. Which one was it? A relative of David anyway, I think. Right. Okay. All right. Anyway, I'm not sure that I've been as impressed as I should be of this miraculous feat of them taking this land of Canaan. But it was quite a miraculous feat that they performed in taking down these great nations that lived there that were very powerful in warfare, had chariots and all kinds of instruments of war that was quite more technical, you might say, than what Israel had. And of course we know it wasn't Israel that did it, was it? It was God that did it, and he told them that he would do it. And so we should be greatly impressed with the faith that the people had, and the faith of Joshua, and then of course most of all the power of God to deliver exactly what he promises. That's what should greatly impress us. John 12 and 26 says, "If anyone serves me, let him follow me. And where I am, there my servant will be also. If anyone serves me, him my Father will honor." So if you want to be honored, you need to honor God. If you honor him, he will honor you. But what happens if you dishonor God? It's a real simple formula. If you dishonor God, He will dishonor you. Job 28 and 28 says, "And to many he said, Behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. And to depart from evil is understanding." As we get into the time period after the death of the great leader of Joshua, there's some awful things that occur. And I would put it under this one heading. The awful thing that occurred is they lost track of who the Lord was. Just lost track of Him. Just like, it's almost like He didn't exist. Judges chapter 2, verse 8 through 15. Would somebody read that for us? Judges chapter 2, 8 through 15.
Joshua, son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died at the age of 110. And they buried him in the land of his inheritance at Timnath-Heres in the hill country of Ephraim, north of Mount Gash. After that whole generation had been gathered to their fathers, another generation grew up who knew neither the Lord nor what he had done for Israel. Then the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord and served the Baals. They forsook the Lord, the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of Egypt. They followed and worshipped various gods of the peoples around them. They provoked the Lord to anger because they forsook him and served Baal and the Asherahs. In his anger against Israel, the Lord handed them over to raiders who plundered them. He sold them to their enemies all around, whom they were no longer able to resist. Whenever Israel went out to fight, the hand of the Lord was against them to defeat them, just as he had sworn to them. They were in great distress.
All right, thank you very much. I have a question that I want you to consider. Maybe you have some answers for us. It says, another generation rose after them who did not know the Lord, nor the work which He had done for Israel. Why do you think they did not know the Lord?
They weren't taught it.
Do you think?
Okay, Mike says they weren't taught it. Okay. All right. Anybody else have any thoughts you want to add? I've got some ideas of my own that pretty much go along with what you both have said.
Of course, the overall big problem is their unbelief. They didn't have any faith. And of course, maybe this generation hadn't seen all those great things in the past. But like Mike said, their forefathers should have been teaching them about here's what this God does. And so, for whatever reason, so for several reasons, they didn't have any faith in God. They didn't believe Him.
Right.
And they dismissed Him.
Deuteronomy, the fourth chapter, starting with verse 7, it says, "For what great nation is there that has God so near to it as the Lord our God is to us? For whatever reason, we may call upon Him. And what great nation is there that has such statutes and righteous judgments as are in all this law which I set before you this day? Only take heed to yourselves, and diligently keep yourself, lest you forget the things your eyes have seen, and lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life. And teach them to your children and to your grandchildren. Especially concerning the day stood before the Lord your God at Horeb, which the Lord said to me, gather the people to me, and I will let them hear my words, that they may learn to fear me all the days they live on the earth, and that they may teach their children." So I think Mike gave us one really good reason. Did they teach their children? Now they might have. But you get the impression that maybe they didn't. Hosea 4 and 6 says, "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because you have rejected knowledge, I also will reject you from being priests for me." Now, Theda said, well, they kind of just, maybe they did know, but they just kind of rejected it, didn't want it.
Well, there was always some people that were still faithful, so I some people's
faith. Right.
Just as a generation, they were.
I think that all through this story that we look at with the children of Israel, there's always been at least a remnant of people that always kept their faith in the Lord. But in general, the whole group just like you say, they didn't want to retain God in their thoughts and their memory and their desires. They would rather go another way. He says, because you have forgotten the law of your God, I also will forget your children. The more they increase, the more they sin against me, and I will change their glory into shame. That's the end of that Hosea 4, 6 and 7. Now, I thought this. Perhaps their example of unfaithful living did not align with the great stories that they may have told about God and about the faithful past. Maybe they were passing on some of these stories, but the way they lived didn't really align with these faithful people of the past.
And the reason it didn't is the very same reason that it doesn't happen today. And that is Satan enters the picture. And Satan tells us lies. That's all he does. And he told them a lie. He led them on. He said, oh, these idols are, you can see them,
Right.
So it's just the two powers working against each other, the power of God and the power of Satan. Just that old battle that went on forever.
That's right. Children see right through hypocrisy, don't they? We have to understand and know that. That our children see right through any hypocrisy that we may display. A picture is worth a thousand words. I've used that a lot, and I just know that's true. That the way you act and what you do has really a lot more power than what you say. Okay, you can say all kinds of things, but if you don't demonstrate it, those words are pretty meaningless. So maybe that's what happened. Yes. I personally think because of the lust of the flesh. I really do. Because that kind of worship involved a lot of immoral sexuality. And we know how people are. We know the pull that the lust of the flesh has. And I personally think that because you think, well, how could they possibly bow down to something that was shaped with their own hands? It doesn't make sense. You can't make any sense out of that. And the only sense I can make out of it is I know that a lot of this idolatrous worship involved immoral sexuality. That's my thought. Do you have a thought?
I don't know. I think what you said sounds correct. I wonder, too, if there's a certain amount of social pressure. They were surrounded and infiltrated by all these people. Nobody likes being different.
Very good point. Very good point, because we know they didn't drive everybody out of the land of Canaan. And what was God's explicit instructions? Destroy them all. Destroy them all. Get rid of them. Drive them out. They didn't do it.
It's kind of interesting, too, that the Egyptians, they were involved in idolatry, but it was a different kind than the nations that they drove out. The nations they drove out, as you said, worship different types of Baal. The Egyptians were more into worshiping the sun, the moon, stars,
etc.
Things like that. But the Israelites made the calf right after they came out of Egypt. Animal worship and things.
Right.
But it's interesting that they, although they stayed with idolatry, they switched. They kind of switched, didn't they? Religion.
Yeah. And I think all along, I think they felt like, well, we're worshiping God. I mean, we can have these idols, we can have these, but we can worship God at the same time. We can kind of combine it all and make it work. I think there's no question that they thought they were really worshiping God all along, even though they had these idols. And like Tad said, we can kind of have best of both worlds. We can kind of be friends with the people that's here, and then we can also, I guess they thought, would satisfy God. Matthew 12:33-34 says, "Either make the tree good and its fruit good, or else make the tree bad and its fruit bad, for a tree is known by its fruit. Brood of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks." And there's a lot more other scriptures that we could do. We don't have time. We need to go on. So the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, and they served Baals, and we've read all that. And it says, wherever they went out, the hand of the Lord was against them for their calamity. And why was that? Well, that was part of the promise, wasn't it? If you obey me, I will bless you, and if you don't, I will curse you. So it doesn't come as any surprise, and yet I'm sure they were so distressed. Many times they were distressed, greatly distressed. And this was a reoccurring cycle that happened over and over, a cycle of depravity throughout the whole period of Judges, which is around 400 years. Israel would do what they thought was right in their own eyes, and God would allow them to suffer oppression from without. But God, being the merciful God that He is, He moved to pity by their groaning, by the people groaning. He says that the Scripture says that He was moved to pity them, and He would raise up a judge to lead them out of their oppression, only to do what? To see them do it all over again. As soon as the judge would die, they'd just go right back in the old ways. Except it seemed like it just kept getting a little worse and a little worse and a little worse. One of the most depraved stories in the whole Bible is in the very last three chapters of the book of Judges. That's the story where the Israelite went into the town of Gibeah. He purposely skipped some other towns that he could have stopped at. But he says, "No, we're going to stop at an Israel. We're going to stop at a town that belongs to the Israelites." And then the rest of the story is just totally. It's like the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, but in a way, only worse. So when we get to the last good judge of Israel, he was a prophet of God. His name was Samuel. And this is what it says in chapter 8, verse 4 through 7 in 1 Samuel. "Then all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah. And he said to him, 'Look, you're old, and your sons do not walk in your ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the other nations.'" There you go. Kind of like what Ted says. We want to be like the people around us. We're tired of sticking out like a sore thumb. Can't we just be like everybody else? Look how things go with them. "But the thing displeased Samuel when they said, 'Give us a king to judge us.' So Samuel prayed to the Lord. And the Lord said to Samuel, 'Heed the voice of the people and all that they say to you, for they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them.'" They didn't want, and like Dwayne's already made that statement, they didn't want, in Theta 2, they didn't want the Lord to be their king. They wanted to have their own king. Samuel was given very explicit instructions in verse 9. He says, "Now therefore, heed their voice. However, you shall solemnly forewarn them and show them the behavior of the king who will reign over them." So Samuel told all the words of the Lord to the people who asked him for a king. And I'm not going to go into all those, but he very specifically told them, "Well, you get a king, he's going to want your daughters, he's going to use their sons, and on, you're going to be taxed, and there's going to be all kinds of things that's going to happen to you that you wished didn't happen." You know, it kind of reminds me that many times in life, good advice is given to us, and we don't heed that good advice. and then we experience pain and suffering. Oh, how God wishes that we would just listen and become wise. Isn't that something? If you could just open your mind and listen, you could become wise. It's just that simple. But think of how many people you know, and maybe even yourself, that you have went through things and experienced things that were horrible and terrible, that were really curses, okay? Because you didn't listen to wisdom, and you didn't follow it. And God begs and pleads with us, just listen to me. I'll tell you everything you need to know to give you an abundant life, to give you a life of blessings, but you gotta listen and you gotta do what I ask you to do. It's just, it's really so simple, it's scary, isn't it? And yet, look how we do. Every one of us have done foolish things that we should have never done, and we were cursed for it. We had to learn the hard way, as we say, but it doesn't have to be that way. Proverbs 5:1, he says, "My son, pay attention to my wisdom. Lend your ear to my understanding." Proverbs 13:10, "By pride comes nothing but strife, but with the well advised is wisdom." Proverbs 19:8, "He who gets wisdom loves his own soul. He who keeps understanding will find good." It's so simple, isn't it? And yet we complicate things so bad because we just don't listen and obey. Israel's blessings in the good years seem to make them proud instead of humble and gracious. You know, they looked so much down on the Gentile. They just hated the Gentile. They didn't have anything to do with him. They just really looked down on him in so many ways. Last week we had mentioned this verse, and I'm going to mention it again. It's very pertinent. Deuteronomy 8, chapter verse 11 through 14, he says, "Be careful that you do not forget the Lord your God, failing to observe his commands, his laws, and his decrees that I am giving you this day. Otherwise, when you eat and are satisfied, when you build fine houses and settle down, and when your herds and flocks grow larger, and your silver and gold increase, and you have all you have is multiplied, then your heart will become proud, and you will forget the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You may say to yourself, 'My power and the strength of my hands have produced this wealth for me.'" Boy, I wonder how much that happened. You know, under Solomon, he was the last. You know, they had three kings. The first three kings were Saul, David, and Solomon. And the kingdom of Israel increased in size and number and in blessings. Although we know Saul was removed from his throne because of his disobedience, but they still continued to grow until they became this great, great nation that was extremely rich. And Solomon was at the helm. But then what happened? It seemed as though their heart was drawn away, wasn't it? They'd become filthy rich. Lots of leisure, lots of great, great blessings. But they became proud. And so in irony, the wisest man to ever live, besides not counting Christ, he begins to acquire foreign wives, and then in his older age, they led him and the country into idolatry. And here he was, the wisest man of all. But you have to be obedient, don't you? You have to listen to the wisdom that God gives us, and then you have to be obedient. So, because of Solomon's disobedience, naturally his son should have taken the throne, Rehoboam, but God says, "Well, I'm only going to give you two groups of people. I'm going to give you Judah, and I'm going to give you Benjamin, and that's all you're going to rule over." And then he gave the other 10 to Rehoboam, who was one of his servants, was one of Solomon's servants. And he gives him 10. Well, the rest of the story is just really sad, isn't it? "Between this divided kingdom, nothing but enmity and strife prevails between the north and the south kingdom." They constantly were at war and fighting with one another. Because the northern kingdom was established in apostasy, making two golden calves to be strategically placed, you remember, at Dan and one at Bethel, the two extremes of their northern kingdoms. They had 19 kings, and how many of those 19 kings did right in the eyes of the Lord?
None.
Not one. Not one of them did right in the eyes of the Lord. And of course, this was all set up by their apostasy to worship two golden calves. In 722 B.C., God promised to curse the disobedient Israel. And this curse that he put on them all came to head in, like I say, in 722 B.C. when Assyria besieged Samaria for 3 years and finally took them away to be scattered among all the nations. And after they were scattered, did they finally regroup and get back together? They were it's just like you took dust and threw it in the wind. It just disappeared. There was maybe a few remnants of people here and there that made it back to the Lord, but basically speaking, they were lost forever. Okay, and they were scattered. The Assyrians took them and scattered them all everywhere. And then they took other nations and put them in their place. Now, as we look at the northern the summation of that, I don't have time because I'm running out of time, but if we read in 2 Kings 17, chapter verse 15 through 18, there's a great summation there. And I'm going to read the last couple of verses. They sacrificed their sons and daughters in the fire. They practiced divination, sorcery, and sold themselves to do evil in the eyes of the Lord, provoking him to anger. So the Lord was very angry with Israel and removed them from his presence. Only the tribe of Judah was left. And then we know the tribe of Judah, how did they do? Did they learn from their brothers that lived to the north of them? No, they ended up being, in a way, worse than the northern kingdom. Because of they had 20 kings. How many kings were considered did what the Lord wanted them to do? Or did some things the Lord wanted them to do? Okay, well, I come up with eight out of 20. And some were like did some good things, but they did some bad things too. Okay. Because of King Hezekiah's exemplary faith, Judah is spared defeat by Assyria. But then, who comes after Hezekiah? Manasseh, his son, comes after him. He had the kingdom for, I think, 50 years? 50 or 55 years. Okay, 55 years. And he was extremely evil. And even the great reform that we had after him by King Josiah wasn't enough to turn the tide. And the Lord, then the last four kings were terribly evil. And so the only thing is that there was a few poor people left in Jerusalem. Jerusalem was destroyed. The rest of the people were taken off to Babylon to live for 70 years in a foreign country. And yet, the Lord was merciful to him, wasn't he? And then we're going to, next week, we're going to start discussing the birth of Jesus. The coming of what really we've been working up to ever since Adam and Eve sinned in the Garden of Eden. We're going to take a short break and then we'll reconvene here in about 5 minutes. Thank you for